Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
They've attacked us, sabotaged us, abducted us, murdered us. We're not the only people on this island, and we all know it.
So I guess I'm out of the book club.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see in another life, brother. We have to go back.
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, and welcome to the Storm and Lost Rewatch Podcast. This episode is for Season 3, Episode 3, Further Instructions. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and the question I have for all our hosts is, are you a hunter or a farmer? And oh, listeners, I'm a weed farmer.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I had a panic attack the last time I tried to touch a real gun, so I am a farmer.
And I'm Neil Miller, and to quote Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder, I'm a lead farmer. So I am both hunter and farmer. So there you go.
I was thinking about making a joke like I'm a weed hunter, but yours is better.
You don't have to hunt weed though. You could just grow it, you know, like in dirt.
I mean, that's true, unless it takes place, pre-legalization Colorado, let's say, and you're a high school student, and like, say you maybe promised to bring weed to a party and then made the mistake of smoking your weed, you become a weed hunter real fast.
It's like,
you're listening.
It's like super bad.
It is like super bad based on
what
true
are we
events.
Listening to?
A podcast about Lost, the ABC series Lost. We're rewatching it here in these excellent times for streaming we found ourselves in. If you are joining us for the first time, welcome. Perhaps you were lured here by last week's episode and our excellent guest. Good news for you, we have an excellent guest again this week. And we have more excellent guests lined up to talk about Lost. We split this podcast into two different sections, three when we have an interview. The first section is called The Calm, and we only talk about episodes up through Season 3, Episode 3, or the episode we've watched. And then we have an interview that does not have any spoilers, so don't worry about that if you're spoiler-averse. But if you love the spoilers, or this is maybe another your second or more time through Lost, and you want to talk about this week's episode, Further Instructions, Season 3, Episode 3, within the context of all six seasons of Lost, The third part of our podcast is called The Storm, and that is where we go spoiler deep. If you look down at your podcasting device, you will see in the show description time codes for each of these things, so you could skip around and dip into spoilers and the storm of spoilers at your own leisure. Hey, if you would like to support this podcast, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, and there you could subscribe to get some bonus content from us, which involves lots of things these days. And this week we have a very special Lost-centric anniversary coming up, and even some more events for our Patreon. Joanna, why should people go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers this week?
Ooh, wow, we have a whole weekend planned for y'all. As you know, we are always live watching the new episodes of Lost together in our Patreon Slack on Saturdays now. This is a thing we do. So we're going to be watching Season 3, Episode 4. At what time do we do it on Saturday, guys? 3 o'clock Pacific, correct?
Yeah, 5 o'clock
4 p.m.
Central
time.
Yes, yeah. All those times. But 3 p.m. Everyone knows the Pacific is the most important time zone, sure. So 3 p.m. Pacific. And then we are going to be watching the Lost series finale also in the Slack on Sunday at 10 a.m. So that is also something that we are doing in our Slack. So
that's the anniversary.
That is the anniversary of the Lost season series finale. That's the anniversary Dave was alluding to. So to celebrate, it's been 10 years. Yeah. On the 23rd, we are going to be, well, we're watching on the 24th. The anniversary is the 23rd. We have a special episode coming for you all that is sort of in celebration of the anniversary. And then we're going to have a very spoilery, stormy series watch along in the Slack on Sunday to honor the 10 years between, you know, and just look back, take a look back. We also, it's also our movie club weekend, I believe.
Yep.
So.
Wait, no, movie club's next weekend.
Never mind. It's not that. We're just all doing TV. This is a TV club weekend. Neil, what's going on with, your Slack watch along this weekend?
We are entering as of this week. So when this episode drops, it'll be like Thursday. That's when we're watching the season 4 finale. As you know, we're watching Breaking Bad every day in the Slack, in our own special channel. So we're starting season 5A. This weekend, which, as you know, since you've seen Breaking Bad, very good season of television, Breaking Bad season 5. So very excited to get that started. We'll be on season 5 on Friday.
Excellent.
Patreon.com/StormRoomSpoilers. Get in on our live watches there. You could also join to get extra bonus. So much to do. You could get bonus podcast content, like Joanna is still doing Feels Like the First Time. They just wrapped up Fast and the Furious this week, but also you could check all of our back content if you are new. There are tons of episodes about various things, some very silly, at patreon.com/StormRoomSpoilers. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Joanna. Go ahead.
Oh, that's totally fine that you did that. I also want to mention, at our producer's request, she asked that we mention the fact that we've had some people asking questions about merch. Do we have merch? We have some merch. We have a little bit of merch. Our pal Wiki Rascals, that's WikiRascals, over on Redbubble, he has a shop, and we've got some old Game of Thrones stuff on there. Some nice, like, Storm of Spoilers. We used to call it Storm of Spoilers, like vintage Storm of Spoilers vintage content over there. But then we also have one which has the Dharma logo with the Storm logo in it. I think it's just called We Have to Go Back. So you can get that on a number of different items if you would like it to show your Dharma love. We've been talking about other ways to provide you with merch, because that is some feedback that we've gotten, that people would like some merch to show their Lost love. So we will be thinking on that. But for right now, that is our quick and dirty solution for you. Redbubble, Wiki Rascals, go check it out. I also want to let you know that is it our 2-year Slackiversary or our 1-year Slackiversary? It's gotta be 2 years.
No, I think
years,
it's 2018, so it's 2 years.
Okay, we're coming up on our 2-year Slack, like 2-year celebration of our community all coming together in our Patreon Slack. The friendships, the enemy ships, the everything. No, there's no enemy ships. Like all the community that has blossomed there has been so lovely.
You could say it's the commune that we've built around our sweat lodge.
That's right. Don't go in my greenhouse.
Don't tell Dave that it's a commune.
So yeah, it's definitely not a cult. But anyway, our in honor of that anniversary, we wanted to one of our listeners requested this, and we're gonna do this. We're gonna do a mailbag episode that's just about sort of our origin story, like how we got here. And it's like, it's gonna be a combination, like, career stuff. Like, if you wanna do podcasting or culture writing or website owning or working for MTV in your life, we can help you with some information about that.
Yes. Sure.
Nice treasure map with a big X on it that you have to kind of figure out yourself.
Or if you have questions about, you know, the Slack, I don't know, whatever. We're just trying to do like an origin story mailbag episode. So our producer will be sending out a prompt for that for you to submit your questions for that. But we'll be having sort of an anniversary origin story mailbag episode coming up for you. And I think that is it for the Patreon, but it's obviously not the only way to get in touch with us, right? You can email us, hoststormpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at stormpodcast. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com, see our schedule, etc. And then you can always leave us a review. We've got a couple new reviews this week that I will be reading for you, and then some emails that I'll be sort of getting to later in the episode. This first review is 5 stars. Zach Sim from New Zealand. I'm not going to do a New Zealand accent, but it's one of my favorite accents in the world. I wish I could do it. Okay, so Zach says, why did I wait so long? Been a fan of The Storm since Game of Thrones season 7. Was so annoyed I hadn't found it sooner. When you announced a Lost rewatch, I was so excited, having been a majorly involved fan when it first aired in 2004. But as a Game of Thrones book reader, season 8 had really broken my enthusiasm for hardcore fandom, and I needed a break. A month became 2, then became 6, and all of a sudden I was so far behind that I saw no point in trying to catch up to the podcast, as I had no time to be rewatching an old show with so much new content demanding my attention. Enter COVID-19. I rewatched the pilot and listened to the accompanying Storm episode and was immediately transported back to being a 13-year-old nerd, watching this intensely gripping series for the first time and spending hours debating it online with complete strangers. An introduction to a style of fandom that would shape how I consume pop culture for years to come. When I listen to this podcast, I'm immediately transported back to those halcyon days of my youth, spending untold hours debating tiny details, Dharma insignia on shark fins, and assorted red herrings in online forums into the small hours of the night while my classmates were going to parties and getting laid. I regret nothing of those formative teenage years, but I do regret not getting immediately involved in the Lost rewatch last year. I am still only in season 1, but with nothing else to do, I will be caught up with you guys in a fortnight. I hope all your quarantines are more Desmond than Rousseau, occasional breakdown that brings you an airliner versus day-to-day crazy eyes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that's from Zach. This one is from Drew, 4/8/15/16/23/42, writes, if you think this podcast deserves anything less than 5 stars, then you are a candidate, and not in a good way, for the Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie, award. Joanna, Dave, and Neil do a great job of diving into Lost, discussing all the mysteries, theories, and making it feel like we're all back at the island. In addition to their great analysis of Lost, they seem like wonderfully genuine people who are also really funny. Nico agrees. This podcast is one of the highlights of my week. Thanks. So that's from Drew. And then this is the last one. And then we're going to roll on. This is from Cat Named Willow. 5 stars. Fantastic podcast. 11 out of 10. Would recommend.
Wow.
I know. The Storm is a delight. Joanna, Dave, and Neil really understand what makes Lost so lovable. They approach each episode with such love for every character and take the admittedly ridiculous mythology of Lost just seriously enough to contextualize and theorize in really fun ways. For Lost newcomers and superfans alike, the format of the pod is very fun, and I particularly love how the hosts respond to criticism and suggestions from listeners, both in terms of making the show more structured slash fun and in terms of addressing some of the more unpleasantly dated aspects of Lost. I'm a longtime fan of Lost, and although I recognize and am bitter over the many poor writing decisions made along the way, I can't help but love pretty much everything about this stupid, sexy show, and I couldn't think of 3 better hosts to take that rewatch journey with. So those are our emails from, our reviews from some lovely folks.
Those are delightful.
They really are. Really, really charming reviews.
Stupid Sexy Show becomes our third iteration after we're done with Lost. I don't know what we're watching, but going from like Storm of Spoilers to SOS to SSS, I'm just into it.
Stupid Sexy Show.
This week on Super Sexy Show, we get to watch something that's super dumb, but super sexy. This week, probably Supernatural Season 13 or something. Who knows?
Hey, Neil, do you want to spend more time celebrating the 10th anniversary of the series finale of Lost?
Actually, it's something that I would like to only do for at least the next week.
Would you like to hear from stars such as Michael Emerson or Jorge Garcia about their experiences on the finale of Lost?
Oh my God, Hurley and quote-unquote Henry Gale? I would love to.
Would you like to support a worthy cause while you're doing it?
Always.
Excellent. Friend of the podcast, Joe Garfine, is hosting a little mini Lost reunion featuring Michael Emerson, Jorge Garcia, and perhaps many more. I've heard a rumor that Bobby Moynihan is going to be there on Instagram at Cancer Gets Lost at various times on the anniversary this Saturday, May 23rd at Cancer Gets Lost. You can check out their Twitter as well for the latest on who will be joining and at what times. But if you're a diehard Lost fans, this is a must do for the big anniversary coming up this weekend. So go support Joe. We love her.
We had a couple emails. I'm going to skip over. I had more emails slated for this section, but I'm just going to say we got a couple emails from some Jack defenders. And I just want to let you know, there are dozens of you out there. Dozens.
There are so many Jack defenders coming out of the woodwork.
At least. And our podcast guest this week is one of my favorite podcasters, Jody Avergan, who was on the 538 Political Podcast, the 30 for 30 podcast, and currently hosts This Day in Esoteric Political History. Huge Jody Avergan fan, and I found out he was quarantined watching Lost. Jody also likes Jack, so we will talk about it in the interview, so I won't like...
It's a pro-Jack interview segment.
Well, he's just mostly like, I don't get what your listeners have against Jack. It's pretty great. He's like, he's like Sawyer's a jerk, and I don't get it. Anyway, so right. Just so you guys know, if you're out there and you're feeling lonely in your Jack love, there are people out there who support and agree with you. But I do want to hit an email that we got from. Let us see. Not that one, not that one, not that one. This one from Jacob. Jacob writes in, he's a calm watcher, and he says, "Don't think you have commented on Desmond's name. I think it's a reference to the philosopher David Hume. Any thoughts on that?" I completely agree. Do you, Neil or Dave, have any thoughts on David Hume? We've got Locke, we've got Rousseau, now we've got Hume.
Yeah, they seem to really like pairing philosophers up with character names. I don't know how much you could, you know, I think David Hume was, let me Google real quick, was Scottish, so, and we were in the right area of the world, but also, like, an economist apparently says this. I don't think it necessarily goes... You're correct to pull that out. And yes, Lost will be dealing with the themes of David Hume. I don't know if we've learned enough to be able to map Locke to Locke, Hume to Hume, etc.
I don't know I know enough about philosophical empiricism to
Let me read a paragraph for you.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we can think about what is going on with Desmond in this episode, and then we can just let that marinate, okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Hume argued that inductive reasoning and belief in causality cannot be justified rationally. Instead, they result from custom and mental habit. We never actually perceive that one event causes another, but only experience the constant conjunction of events. This problem of induction means that to draw any causal inferences from past experience, it is necessary to presuppose that the future will resemble the past, a presupposition which cannot self be grounded in prior experience. So, I'm just going to leave that there.
Something to chew on.
Something to think about terms of...
Sounds similar to Locke to me, but let me... Blake, again, it's been a while since I've... As somebody in our Slack pointed out that around the second season was when they published, like, the Lost and Philosophy books. I think there was two of them. So maybe I need to swing back and read some of those, because I remember really enjoying those and Blank and Philosophy books, especially when they were, like, midstream with something like Lost. And in the middle of the second season is really a great time to come up with all the crazy Lost theories, as we learned.
So that's it for, like, our introductory emails. I've got another email that we're going to be hitting in the middle of the episode, and then a couple more that are going to pop up in the storm. But that's it for the comm, and I am done. Over to you, Neil.
Ooh, let's talk about what this episode is about. This episode, Further Instructions, is the fourth episode of the third season of the show known as Lost. This episode was directed by Stephen Williams, written by Carlton Cuse and Elizabeth Sarnoff. It aired on October 18th, 2006, and it takes place on day 68 on the island. Yes, we are now going backwards. This is a flashback inside of a flashback episode. In our flashback, a slightly younger John Locke picks up a hitchhiker who looks like Aaron Paul, but isn't quite Aaron Paul. John takes him back to the commune where he lives without being angry. It's good for John. As it turns out, not Aaron Paul is a cop, and it's further evidence that John Locke has a history of being very easily fooled. On the island, John wakes up And despite the fact that he can no longer talk, he insists that he needs to speak with the island. So he builds a sweat lodge. John speaks to the island in the form of a goopy vision, and guess what? It's Boone. Boone is the island now. We'll get into that later. After the vision quest, Charlie and Locke go off to find Mr. Echo, who has been taken by a polar bear. They meet up with Hurley along the way and exchange strange tales. Hurley heads back to camp, but not before Desmond shows up in the nude. Very, very nude. And then says some weird stuff that feels out of order chronologically. Locke and Charlie bring the very battered Mr. Echo back to camp, where we meet the two most important members of the beach crew, Nikki and Paolo. We've been waiting so long to meet Nikki and Paolo.
My faves.
Also, John gives a pretty good speech. It all ends with Hurley having a little bit of deja vu as he watches Desmond in a very large t-shirt throw rocks into the ocean. I have a couple of fun facts. The first one is that in Locke's flashback, the sheriff threatens to arrest him for picking up a hitchhiker. Hitchhiking is not illegal in California.
Point of order.
Yes, go.
It is illegal to hitchhike on the side of the road. You can hitchhike, but you have to be at like a rest stop or, you know, a designated area for hitchhiking.
See, we learned something about California law. Okay. fun fact number two, not Aaron Paul's name is Justin Chatwin. He was also not Aaron Paul on Weeds. And most recently, he is definitely still not Aaron Paul on Netflix's Another Life, which I think somebody tweeted at me or us this week asking if we had watched yet. And the answer is not yet, but someday. In Another Life, brother. That leads us all to this week's calm question. Have you ever hitchhiked? I will start by saying absolutely not. I do not trust and never have trusted strangers, apparently. But have you either of you ever hitchhiked? Joanna, have you? Now, I almost have to assume so because you know the law so well.
I've never hitchhiked in California, actually. I have hitchhiked, though. When I lived in Hawaii, I lived on the top of like a tall mountain, and I did not have a car at the time. And in order to get anywhere, I either had to borrow my aunt and uncle's car, get a ride from my aunt and uncle, or hitch down the mountain or up the
mountain.
This
was in the pre-Uber days, obviously.
Yeah, and Uber's not really like going up the mountain in Haleiwa in Oahu. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So to like just to get to the beach or the grocery store or the coffee shop or anywhere at all, I had to hitch. So but like the thing is, on that mountain, it's just like a small enough place where it's like pretty countrified and a small enough place that like everyone who's going up and down the mountain like lives on the mountain. So it's not like you're not on the side of a highway. I would never hitch on the side of a highway. But hitching up and down a mountain where I know the people who live on the mountain, I did have like some guys say gross things to me. That did happen. But I was never in danger of my life as far as I know.
Dave, have you ever hitchhiked on the side of a highway?
Not exactly. What I have done is been out in the desert with some of my friends and thought it was funny if I took off my shirt and had them write looking for a good time on my chest, and then I stood out by the highway, and if anybody slowed down, we would just run away. It's closer to the highway than I think what Joanna was doing. That happened. But I don't think I'm much more of a walker if I get like stranded somewhere, even if it takes like hours. That's not necessarily like a downside for me. Plus now with the whole facial hair vampire situation I have going on, I would just not get picked up.
Sure. That's fair.
If you were wearing your suit, I'd pick you up.
The purple suit?
You wouldn't be.
Or the red suit.
Yeah,
not which suit? The red
it's
suit.
The red suit. That is just
not
the devil.
Red
yeah.
Suit. No.
Yeah,
I'm going to be like,
oh, I met this guy.
Take me to Los Angeles and I'll teach you how to play guitar.
At a crossroads in the middle of nowhere.
It's fiddle or nothing. My God. Teach me fiddle or give me death. Yeah.
Fiddle's for competition. Guitar's for soul trading. Neil, you said you haven't hitchhiked, right?
No, I'm never.
Okay, good.
I don't like getting in cars with people I know sometimes, yeah. Let alone people I don't know.
Fair. And then you don't ever end up on a weird commune with John Locke.
Although I would, I would live at this commune. Like, this is a pretty chill as far as communes go that are also doing crime. I guess weed is sort of like the lowest stakes, which I love, in the flashback, one of the funnier scenes is when he's like, I'm ready to blow something up. And John's like, yeah, okay. This is a weed farm, bud.
So you're crazy.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I would never hitchhike, but I might live at this commune.
Yeah. Do we think that... So the stakes of the flashback is obviously, Locke getting duped again as Locke gets duped in his flashbacks. So it's kind of same old there. But this
Duping and gooping.
How this guy ever assumes that he's right about anything is really a wonder at this point.
Duping and gooping, the John Locke story. Duped and gooped again. I would watch a Dupe and Goop franchise. You know what I mean? Like Duped Again, the Goopening, any of that. Okay.
I mean, there's a world where this is like a franchise that's set back in the 60s, like in the early Dharma days or something, where it's like the Timothy Leary rejects have been duped out of society and come to the island to goop their way through trauma that I could definitely see working on the
or to just grow island. Their weed in peace, man.
This super judgy island.
To bring us back to the fact that I am from Northern California, I will just say that as soon as not Aaron Paul says he's trying to get to Eureka, I'm like, well, this is a story about weed. That's all that happens in Eureka and Humboldt. There's a section of Northern California called the Emerald Triangle that is just like basically all weed farms. And
I believe there's a whole season about it on Justin Chatwin's other show, Weeds. Isn't there a whole thing where she goes anyway?
But some of our listeners who were live watching were like, why do you need all those guns for this like peaceful weed? And I'm like, buddy, you don't know what these like serious weed farms are like, because yes, you do need all those guns. It's pretty scary shit up there. I was dating a guy once who told me that his brother moved up there to work on a vegetable farm. I was like, oh, your brother's growing weed. He's like, no, he's just organic farming vegetables. I was like, yeah, a vegetable called weed. That's what he's growing up there. He's like, no. And then 2 years later, he's like, turns out Ryan was growing weed that whole time. I was like, I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I just wanted to like bring my note. We might have, I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. Our producer Diana has expressed some interest in maybe doing a bonus segment about the weed farms in Northern California, because her mom used to live on like a commune, and we have firsthand knowledge of this setting. And it might be fun to hear from Diana. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, you might hear our producer Diana talk more about communes and weed farms.
Listen, that's a lot to pull out of this episode. I didn't really enjoy that part of, but I am into that content.
Listen, we're finding the joy where we can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is for a couple more episodes here in season three, we gotta hunker down.
In theory, the fact that he worked on a weed farm where there is a sweat lodge explains why he knows how to goop in the first place, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's also, like one of fits with, John's character arc of really sort of bottoming out and like losing his faith in his family, and sort of what John, I always found it fascinating, like what John Locke did after all these terrible things kept happening to him.
It's not that it's not fascinating. I just feel like in season three, the stakes or the contrast between what's happening in the flashback and what's happening on the island seem to have misaligned stakes. I'm not sure necessarily why I don't feel scared for Echo. Well, I probably don't feel scared for Echo because the bear threat is a badly rendered CGI mess. am I supposed to feel any sort of weird tension about how Locke's found himself not angry and like this criminal element, because all that sort of comes across is that last scene where he decides not to shoot somebody, which I feel is already something I knew about Locke. Maybe that's it. It feels like repeating, considering we left John Locke with "I am wrong," and then we punch back in where he has to clean up his own mess, and then we see a flashback where he's like wrong again. Feels like hammering down on Locke a little bit.
I mean, I think there's also this idea that the situation with Eddie, his buddy. Aaron Paul.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's at the end, it's more about like, oh, John, you're not a killer. I'm a cop. I know what killers look like. You're not a killer. But he's also in his other flash to the island, in his island goop time. He's sort of reliving the trauma of like, what did he do to Boone? And like, should he be guilty about that? And I think in that way, it accomplishes it. Somewhat, I don't know. Because I mean, it's, like, the flashback is telling us that John wasn't a killer, and then, but we know that he's pretty responsible for what happened to Boone.
Yeah, I guess why compare and contrast these two brunettes that John Locke has like control over their life? Like
it's bad dad and found family shit. It's classic mm-hmm. Law stuff. But I agree. I mean, like, we're in a section of the show where for some of our favorite characters, they've already mined so much of their backstory. Like, we hit that wall really early with Charlie, but we're hitting it with even some of our more favorite, richer characters like Locke. And so,
like, the fact that they're like, here's how we learned how to make goop before we learned why he's in a wheelchair seems needlessly withholding to me at this point.
That I will agree with. I think it's really funny that the whole reason we're doing this Lost podcast is because Dave's like, I love Lost, it's my favorite show. And I feel like right now, every week, Dave's like, this episode is garbage. And Neil and I are like, well,
we're in a spat of episodes that I don't think are great, but we'll see. You guys gotta pull me through the goop.
I think they might be fine.
I think they're fine. I think they're not great, but they're fine. I don't necessarily think
this is one of the worst ones. You know, like, there is a lot of, like, what we're talking about is, like, there's a lot of, like, treading water until they figure out what to do with John Locke next. But I don't necessarily think this is an example of, like, necessarily a bad flashback, because I do think we get a lot of, like, information about what was going on with Locke, and, like, the goop thing. They probably felt pressure to explain the goop thing at some point. And they're like, Sweat Lodge. Great.
If I had my ideal version of this episode, it would be, there would not be the not Aaron Paul flashback. Sorry, Justin Chatwin. And instead we would see, like all more goop and Boone vision stuff. All mm-hmm. the like visiony stuff really works for me, and I would just want like more of it in the episode. And I wish Boone were there for the whole episode. I don't know if Ian Somerhalder was too busy doing Vampire Diaries at this point, but like, he's so welcome now because like Ian Somerhalder has figured out how to make Boone interesting, and I'm like, bring more ghost Boone, please.
Well, and I think that you know, they had already played with in season two the format. They're already starting to tinker with flashbacks, and you know, we had the other 48, which was all on island, but with flashbacks. So they could have done something like that. I don't see any reason why not. But yeah, that probably would have made it a little better. I have a fun fact about Locke's vision, since we're talking about Boone looking dreamy through it. This is about the cinematography. And it's shot, it looks very different, even though it was shot on film, just like, the rest of the series was. Michael Bonvillain, which I am only pronouncing Bonvillain until someone corrects me, who's a cinematographer for most of Game of Thrones.
You mean
most of Lost, sorry.
Michel Bonvillain?
Yeah, exactly. So they use a narrow shutter angle, and basically, so like on a camera or a film camera, any kind of camera, you have your aperture, which controls how much light gets in. And so when you open that up a little bit more, you get a more, you know, you get a higher exposure, which, you know, makes things brighter. So they did, they actually filmed it differently. And then there's a lot of like color correcting stuff. Lost, very, heavily color corrected show anyways. I mean, I think they shoot a lot. They shot a lot of day for night and stuff like that. So, but in those, the reason why it looks like super washed out is because, they filmed it slightly differently.
I like calling your shot that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's there to instill a sense of chaos or a sense of like choppiness. You know, it's sort of, you know, like using a bright white screen, you know, intermittently would, you know, cause people to.
Can we, yeah, weird. like a, yeah, strobing sort of.
Almost like a, yeah, almost yeah. like a really slow strobe. Yeah.
Can we talk about the vision really quickly?
Yes.
Let's.
All right. So we've got, I love this. I think it's really fun. The only thing that's missing is Nikki and Paolo, but like everyone is like in their formation of where they currently are on the island, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the El Boat Sex crew. You've
yep.
got Hurley.
Saeed's got it handled.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Ghost Boone didn't watch last week's episode, but okay.
Well, no, canonically, this is before last week's episode, so Saeed is handling it. In this
Saeed
time
had
period.
It handled at that time, yeah.
True. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. And then we've got Sawyer and Kate just like flirting the shit out of each other in line there. And then Jack separated off with Ben, scanning him. Who else? Am I missing anyone? Oh, Claire and Charlie.
Desmond's reading the numbers. Desmond's,
oh,
yeah. The Playboy
okay.
pilot.
Yeah, there's a lot. They're all in there.
Catch Me If You Can, Desmond. All right, so let's talk about Catch Me If You Can, Desmond.
He's running around the jungle with a bunch of flight attendants. I'm sorry, I wanted to make sure he's the right word there.
This is the only aspect of the vision where I'm like, what's happening here? Because, like, I mean, I guess it could be, like, a cute little nod to the fact that, like, the women watching Lost are like, wow, Henry Ian Cusack, what a dreamboat, right? But mm-hmm. I'm like, Desmond's a one-woman guy. Like, he's it's very true. Loyal to his one girlfriend. So to make him into this, like, playboy and, like, Desmond's taking care of himself, I don't know. I don't know if that I love that. Yeah. But it is funny.
I mean, John doesn't know a ton about Desmond. So if we're taking this as, like, a literal John's brain talking to him, then I can see how he just has, like, no idea what's going on with Desmond. But well, if it really is the island should know Desmond pretty well.
Right. And the island, like, John doesn't know that Jack is separated off from Sawyer and Kate and being, like, fucked
That's
with
true.
By Ben. And John doesn't
so
know
it
that.
It has to be the island.
Yeah. John doesn't know that Hurley, like, is, you know, not with them anymore and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, this is the island. Boone as the island, sort of. Casting aspersions at the handsome Scotsman. But yeah, anyway, I love this vision. It's not a kind of thing that Lost does a lot, and I really enjoy it. So
is it just there to highlight that Desmond's there, therefore he's alive? Because at that point, Locke doesn't know if Desmond like Echo's alive. Sense. Yeah. So the whole, well, I mean, in terms of like, if you're the island and you're showing John a vision based on like what John knows, the visual signification of don't worry about this dude, he's right there, is he's the pilot and he's surrounded by like attractive flight attendants. You do not need to worry about this dude.
So yeah, Desmond's fine. Don't worry about it. That's what the vision's trying to tell him.
Desmond's sexy. Don't worry about it. Yes, yeah. No, I understood that was the yes, I did understand that.
He's sexier than than you, and all the women are after him. John, you got to clean up this mess.
He is now sexier because oops, all his clothes blew off. should we talk about how this episode opened? Like the very weird, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say. As far as I'm concerned, it's never fully explained. That Charlie comes out of the jungle
mm-hmm.
a little dazed. And then, like, he's like, John, you don't call, you don't write, which is like, take a drink every time someone says that on Lost, apparently. But like, you don't call, you don't write. It's been a day since the hatch exploded. I'm like, what the F? Why did no one go looking
why
for the people that you
no
knew
one concerned?
Were in the hatch? Why is this John's fault?
They forgot about Locke. Just like they forgot about Walt, but not even like they forgot about Walt. Locke was like not far away.
Just like they lost Daenerys him. Targaryen forgot about the Iron Fleet. You know what I mean? Like they kind of forgot to go look for Locke. And like the thing is,
and Desmond, who they also know exists,
and Echo. the thing is, yeah, it makes no sense. So unless
especially for Charlie,
like,
because Charlie was like there.
I mean, I guess what's true is that they've lost their main candidates for let's charge into the jungle and not ask questions and just like solve things. Because right. Jack's not there and Kate's not there.
The people who are very, very high on the what's that noise? Let's go look and see.
Let's run directly at it. Yeah.
There was on last week's interview with Damon Lindelof, Joanna was talking to him about how like one of the powers of the series is that the main characters never like get together and talk to each other about what happened. And I've been trying to, since I heard that, pivot my viewing of Lost to view that as a strength. So when we could see it, that's like a choice. That's like a choice they made to keep the engine of their show running. I'm going to try to keep that in mind going forward, because this episode is kind of weird in the sense that they've condense this episode to be the one where everybody on the beach learns what's happened sort of in the previous two episodes. Even though, you know, we don't technically know about Sun and Jin yet, we're not going to flash away from the beach people to the boat next week. We're either going to be in one of the camps. So I'm going to start watching Lost pulling these like cute little magic tricks where we're, you know, it's too late. Locke is mute and he's building a sweat lodge. Don't ask questions about why Charlie didn't look for Locke or why nobody on the beach was looking for him. It doesn't matter. Something else has happened.
I'm sorry. Lost has moved on.
Yeah. I like that momentum as a power move.
Okay. Sure. I mean, that's the thing is like, yes, obviously it's just easier for them to just sort of yada, yada, yada. Charlie forgetting about being in the hatch explosion.
But it's still pretty silly.
It's silly.
Well, they have that in the same episode where Charlie is the one reminding everybody how ridiculous it is that there are more bears out there. So I think it like kind of works. I mean, they're using the tools at their disposal, but I think what I used to look at something like that and being like it was an oversight, now I'm starting to think about it not as an oversight, but as a conscious choice that they're working around.
It does.
Like,
it
those
does,
people,
yeah.
They can't ask the world building questions, so I should actually be giving them credit for propelling the show around the world building questions when they have to.
I mean, I will say I like Charlie in this episode more than I've liked Charlie in a long time. This is a great Charlie episode in terms of like him taking the piss out of Locke works well for him. His usual like whiny include me thing is not bothering me in this episode. So I like this Charlie a lot. That being said, it's pretty rich for Charlie, who literally stole a baby because of a vision he had to like knock anyone else for their visions or their ideas about bears on the island. Will this consistently be an issue? Yes. But
that was like less than 2 weeks ago that the baby was stolen, I think, on island time.
Yeah.
So don't worry about Charlie and the baby. We've left that behind us when the hatch imploded.
Okay.
I guess. But yeah, it is nice to see that character interaction work positively in terms of Charlie tagging along with somebody who actually, not with somebody who wants him along, but when the audience actually wants him tagging along this time, which, you know, leads us to Bear, which is not great. But I think that Charlie taking the piss out of Locke.
Not a great use of polygons.
I will say,
not a great use of polygons.
Is it better than the Bear in season one? Isn't it better because it's like in the dark?
I
would say
no.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think it actually looks. Well, go ahead, Neil.
Well, that the one that they did in season one was like they like had to like kind of make like legs, and then they had somebody running, and so it kind of almost looked like a bear.
Wait, they had someone in like bear.
Well, there was like a bear leg thing where they shot it from the legs down. This one, you almost never see it running. You hear it running. You sort of see whirring through the jungle, but you really don't never get a good look at it when it's outside or when it's charging. But then, yeah, when it's inside the cave, it looks terrible.
I'm sending you guys a link right now, and I'm going to need you to click on it and tell me. Just sent it into the Skype chat.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was from, that's the first one, right?
Yeah.
The terrible bear that they threw at him.
That's what I'm saying.
At least that was a real better thing.
Oh God. Okay.
I don't know. No? See, this one looks like it's painted like with white paint, like against a black background. The lighting on it's wrong to begin with, and the white.
The
color
only thing
is
that you
not...
ever see is like its face moving around.
What about this one? I just sent you another one. That's from season one as well. I gotta say, I think this bear is better.
No, I'm standing firm. This bear is worse. All right.
The second one you shot was the bear pushing into the bamboo after Walt, and I actually like that bear better.
Wow.
Like it doesn't have a ton of pure white on it. It's obviously based on some sort of physical reference in the actual space. The problem I have with the cave scene this week is it's basically like they looked at the Wampa sequence at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back and was like, what if we did that, but shittier? And they executed it almost exactly. And I'm like, this is just not great. Like the Wampa sequence, at least they had like a Wampa there. But even then, like George Lucas mostly cut it out. Like, the full shot's a bear. And then the whole idea of like putting a fireball into a bear's face is great, but it's also a special effect that they did not have the time to execute properly. So I would almost want in that situation there to be like no CGI bear, like just get that stuffed bear back and have a tussle with it in the dark. At least then, cause like what Stephen Williams and a lot of the Lost directors do really well, as we learned in the first season, when there's like whole scenes in the pilot of them running when they weren't actually running, is like using camera motion to like do action and the way they like sort of speed up and make the vision exciting through like various motions and whatnot. Once you are adding a CG effect, you're taking away all of their tools, because you can't have a shaky camera. You can't have like a bunch of changing lighting. You can't have like different focus things, because those are all additionally moneyed effects that you pay for. So if you're going to have like a shitty bear encounter in a cave, if I were the producer, I would see, you know, Lost is this like gigantic show for ABC. I would see the impetus to be like, try a CGI bear, but I don't see why you wouldn't also make the argument that like our directors are really good at making nothing look like something. Maybe they are the ones we should put our bet on in this particular roulette wheel spin. But that's just me. I'm quarterbacking like more than 10 years after the fact. Maybe someone was like out there, like they got the Coca-Cola polar bear company, and they were like, oh yeah, and wait till you see what we do in Golden Compass. My God, we're the polar bear geniuses. That sounds very likely. That's been Dave's Polygon rant for this week.
Yeah, they should have just done it practical and cleaned it up with digital. That's what they would. I feel like that's kind of what they would do now, right?
I feel like now they would get a real polar bear.
Yeah.
No, wait, no. They would
not for this. They would, like, cave scene.
They would take a polar bear and strap it to a whole bunch of chicken wire and light it on fire with a flaming sword in the snow is how they would do it these days. It's a Game of Thrones reference for those of you who aren't going.
It's along. the one-year anniversary of the Game of Thrones finale.
We've been pitching this effect that's so fucking complex. We can't wait. Right, we've been waiting seasons to get it in.
All right.
It's a polar bear.
Remember a couple weeks ago, Dave, when you were like, do you think a polar bear could have done that thing that Sawyer did? And we were like, yeah, there were two polar bears. And now we know there were two polar bears, right?
Yeah.
So there were at least two polar bears. The Walt one was shot, right? They've all been shot. Or did they just...
Sawyer,
no, the Walt one... Yeah, Sawyer shot it. Sawyer shot the first one.
Oh, did there's shoot three the polar bears?
Yeah, what happened to the second one? I think this is our third polar bear. I think it just runs off.
Yikes.
So this could be our second polar bear.
It's a lot of polar bears, man.
There's a lot of polar bear stuff in this show. Wow. For a show that's set in the South Pacific.
Who knew? How weird.
Yeah.
What's a polar bear doing on that island?
It's just one of the many,
we will find out.
Yeah, I bet that pays off satisfactorily.
It does. Dave,
sort of.
Buck up. You're in a bad mood. I need you to buck up.
Listen, I mean, it's true. The polygons were not great.
Let's talk about Nikki and Paolo.
Let's. Everything that happened on the island that wasn't polar bears, I actually liked this week. So,
like the Hurley and Desmond thing is great. And then they finally get back and meet Nikki and Paolo.
Remember when Hurley goes, bear? When he hears some rustling?
Yeah.
Bear?
Lost is a comedy.
I do want to follow up really quickly, though, on how Locke got rid of that polar bear. That is a move that he almost certainly learned from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, from the film Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in which he says, I forget what the setup is, but she goes, no, my keen fashion sense. And then she, pumps her hairspray onto a flaming cross and kills a vampire. It's great stuff, so...
Nice.
It's now canon to me that John Locke is a fan of the Joss Whedon film.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The one VHS they had in Eureka. It was Buffy, the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
John Locke's like, do you know Ben Affleck is in that movie? And Hilary Swank? Two future Oscar winners? And Donald Sutherland, who also has an Oscar?
As he's mixing the goop. He's watching him.
He always introduces himself as being really into Buffy, but not the TV show, the original movie that the TV show was based on.
You know what I would love to see? You know how in Reign of Fire, the greatest dragon film of all time?
Yes.
Gerard Butler it's probably Christian Bale, right? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, Batman, Christian Bale.
Yeah. That they're reenacting Star Wars for the kids because they don't have TV.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see Locke and maybe Charlie reenact Buffy the Vampire Slayer for Nikki and Paolo who did not get to see it for themselves. And you've never seen the Buffy movie?
That's the job I'm going for in our current apocalypse. So when this thing goes Mad Max, I'm going to be the guy who can retell you all the movies that don't exist because the internet is gone.
Yeah. Have you ever read the book Station 11?
No.
That's the plot of Station 11, that there's this troop of performers who go around in the post-apocalypse and perform Star Trek for people and stuff like that. So can I join your caravan is my question.
Absolutely. Okay, that's great. I think we're all going to have to. Well, Dave probably has a whole plan, but we'll get to that.
I will probably also be dead by that point. By the time that we've reformed theater groups, I am probably dead.
Let's be honest, Neil and I are probably also dead. Anyway, anything else we want to talk about in the calm?
You can't get rid of Neil. He's got all the perfect shots archived away.
Yeah.
We should talk a little bit more about Desmond and Hurley, right? Because Desmond seems to be a little out of sorts. And that seems to be, maybe we don't need to talk about it, but I feel like the episode hits that before it's out, we should also hit that before it's out.
Yeah, it Desmond, is one of those quick island mysteries where it's wait, what's going on with Desmond? And then John gives a speech and you see Hurley sort of figuring out. We still don't really know what's going on with Desmond, but we have a little better idea that he, I don't know, maybe
we can at least through exclusion know that something's different about what happened to Desmond, because A, no clothes, and B, doesn't seem to be all bloodied up as much as Echo, who did get pulled away by bears, but also John, who woke up kind of bashed around. So we have some context clues there, but other than that, just have a naked Desmond that everyone sort of takes, I don't know, I guess if someone's been missing for a couple of days, if they show up naked, there's not a lot of questions to be asked. It's if you're not going to ask why they were gone for multiple days, then certainly don't start with the nakedness. Anyway, Something's different about Desmond. Keep an eye on that.
As I mentioned in our Slack watch along, I will take a naked Desmond as payment for Sundress Kate. So if we are trading.
Fair's fair.
Yeah, trading true. Exploitative, you know, imagery on the show.
Although I will say,
thank you. What?
Dave and I were talking about this before we started recording. This is like, you know, and we've been doing Breaking Bad in the Slack. This is like a Breaking Bad, Bryan Cranston level of nudity, which is impressive for a show that actually was on ABC, not cable. So they really did get a lot of Desmond onto your screen.
Yeah, that's,
which is impressive for a Desmond network show.
There. We don't see his like...
We don't see any frontal.
We don't see his butt, do we?
Oh, no, I think we definitely get some butt.
I don't think we get his butt.
I'll have to go through the stills.
Okay. I just want to say for the record.
This is why Neil is valuable in the apocalypse.
I have not pored over the stills of Desmond, but I don't think on ABC primetime you can
show. It's about
show
as close as you can come on ABC,
butt.
Yeah.
But I think there's like probably some like well-placed shrubbery in front of his butt so that you don't see it. And then he turns mm-hmm. around and he is like modestly covering everything else. But the
one more thing that I do, oh sorry go ahead no if you have more nakedness things to say I want
do
before I, okay
in
yeah,
fact
go for it.
The most 2020 thing about this episode is Hurley's tie-dyed t-shirt, because I don't know if you know this, but tie-dye is back, baby.
Oh, I did not know
that. Ooh. Yeah, the teens are the TikTok teens are really into tie-dye, and they like to tie-dye things. If you ever tie-dye something with bleach, you tie up a shirt like you would do to tie-dye it. But you use bleach instead on like dark colors, and so it creates this sort of like cool orangey whatever. But mm-hmm. apparently you can do it with like toilet bowl cleaner, because toilet bowl cleaner has enough bleach in it that it works. Anyway, I've watched some TikTok teens tie-dye shirts with toilet bowl cleaner.
Hey, as You're long as welcome. I'm not drinking it, I'm fine with it.
All right, Dave, carry on, my friend.
Before we get into our corners, I just want to mention something that I don't think we're going to cover in the storm, but feels important to ask you guys what Locke hears from Echo this episode. Island talking or residual goop?
Well, I mean, we've already established that the goop is the island communicating, because it's telling John things that John shouldn't know.
So if we're gonna go there,
then yeah, I think also Echo is part of the island speaking to Locke.
All right, Joanna.
Yeah, the island.
Island. Island is the verdict.
Do we think so? My assumption is that Echo doesn't actually wake up. Like John, I always assume that John hallucinates like that whole thing.
I don't think Echo ever actually wakes up.
He's just hurt now.
Well, I don't think he's hallucinating it. I think it's happening, but it's the island like doing it, you know?
Hmm.
Like, but that's why, you know, I guess the hallucination part is why I should have asked goop or no goop. Was it like the goop being like talking to John through his chemical alteration, or did the island wake up and puppet Mr. Echo for a second? I think it might have been puppeting.
That's a weird way to say it, but yeah, that's probably what it did.
I mean, that's the best way. Presumably it has Christian's body somewhere so they could puppet around, because Jack wasn't on any substances back in White Rabbit, so... Yeah, he was really tired.
It's as real as Christian Shepherd on the island, I'll tell you that much.
Definitive answer right there. All right, it's time for our corners, our reoccurring segments of the podcast. This week, we're going to start with Giacchino Corner. Neil, do we have any new tracks?
There is a new track. It is just called The Island. And it's plays during the dream sequence that we've been talking a lot about. And it's a playoff of Locke's theme. Of course, as we now know, it doesn't have a clever name, but, you know, they don't all. It's fine.
Our Jungle of Mystery moment belongs to the Tonka truck in the bear cave. Is somebody feeding the bear children? We don't know.
Is that where the kids went?
There's a Tonka truck, and there's, like, a pearl station, like, shredded some sort of cloth.
Or is the bear... Or are polar bears like dragons? They hoard things.
Like Smaug?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, dragons.
What do you what else do you think is in I'm just gonna call him Gerald the polar bear. What else do you think is in his hoard behind
Sawyer's been gone long enough, he's got all the porn magazines now.
All the porn.
Do you think he's taken a tarp or two for his hoard?
Oh yeah, I mean,
oh, definitely.
So probably just water blew in one day.
I actually think that Jer-Bear, as he now is going to be called, polar bears can swim, right? Mm. So maybe he has a bunch of Virgin Mary statues that he got from the bottom of the ocean and is stashing.
Do you think Joanna's like, oh, in
shit,
his
that's
pile?
That's invaluable.
I think at least a piece of Joanna is in his pile.
Considering we never got a body for Joanna could be like, alive, just horribly, like, you know,
it's like a femur at least or something.
Yeah, yeah, she could just like partially alive in the bear cave.
Not
do
at
you
this
think
point.
Making friends with the bear.
Jin's flashcards from the raft are in Jer-Bear's hoard.
Oh yeah, anything that we've lost basically is in Jer-Bear's cave.
Not lost. It's in Jer-Bear's hoard. I'm going to try to remember this next time something goes missing. I'll be like, well, I know where it is.
Clearly. It's in the bear cave.
The bear's got it. And that hoarding bear.
That's where Rugby's shirt went. The rugby shirt is definitely in the
That's
bear
where
cave.
Nikki and Paolo were prior to this episode.
Walt, came after Echo, came after all the stuff, so we knew he wasn't racist.
Okay, so let's be clear about Nikki and Paolo really quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two characters show up right at the end of the episode. They are hot, but we're used to hot people being on the beach, but these hot people speak, and you're like, what the heck? Like, Nikki runs up and she says Hurley's name and is demanding things. I'm like, how dare you? You're a background player. Anyway.
Yeah. It's really shocking to see two new characters show up, have names, and then begin talking to characters we've been with for, you know, 2+ seasons as if they've known each other the whole time. That's just like a weird moment to experience.
They could have made it worse. Like, Paolo could have been something like, oh, so we're telling people about the guy in the hatch now and be like, oh, Paolo was in on it?
Paolo's like, my shower time. Anyway, Paolo.
He's like, I've been over here prepping Ana Lucia's secret army. Like, where is she?
Yeah.
That's where Ana Lucia's secret army is, in the bear cave. It's fine. So Paolo, of course, is played by the great Rodrigo Santoro, who many people know as Hector Escalón. Escaton, from Westworld, or as, I always want to call him a hot Carl, but unfortunately that has negative connotations, but Carl from Love Actually, or Xerxes from the 300. Anyway, I think
or the guy who is in the scene with Diane Lane in Unfaithful.
Is he in Unfaithful?
Yeah, isn't he in Unfaithful?
I thought that was like Olivier, what's his name?
No, that was him, right? No, it wasn't.
What's that guy's name? It's like Olivier something, isn't it? He's French.
Oh my God, are they the same guy? Anyway, go on with your Rodrigo Santoro talk. There's a whole thing.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I think in 2006, when Rodrigo Santoro shows up, you're not like, it's Hector. You're just sort of like, oh, it's a guy that maybe I've seen in Love Actually or whatever. Olivia Martinez is the guy from
Oh my God. But they really are the same guy.
But now we're like, what the heck is Rodrigo Santoro doing on this beach? So that's all. It's just his successful career has made the introduction of Paolo that much more jarring, is the point. So
how dare
weird
he
at the
be
time,
something else?
Too. Just from like a narrative sense, it was weird.
Sure.
Oh, for sure. You felt that new character jut
smell.
In. Smell. Yeah, you felt that new character smell. This week's Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award is a three-way tie to Desmond, Mr. Echo, and Locke, who all end up having fallen down after the season 2 finale. Also, they can all be presented by Boone Carlisle this week. Congratulations. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, goes to what I could find is Eddie's only lie, interestingly enough, in the flashback, where Eddie says, now that I see the fertilizer going into that greenhouse, I know what's going on and I want in. And Locke says, in on what? And Eddie says, whatever you guys are trying to blow up. He might be wrong, but also Eddie definitely does not want in. He wants to call the cops.
Wait, okay, here's a question though. Is this a lie that Eddie's telling, or do you think that he, cause we obviously know by the end of this that Eddie was undercover cop trying to get where John was going. But like, do we know that Eddie knew that there was weed in there, or did maybe he think there was a bomb in there?
I don't think he knew that there was weed, honestly, because like they're like the guns, the fertilizer, the whatever.
Like he thought it was like one of those kind of communes.
Yeah.
I'm saying that I'm in part is the lie, because that's the most Eddie gets involved in the actual conspiracy.
Eddie's large.
You're probably right about the lie. He's probing about
being a cop.
Yeah, exactly. But otherwise, he says stuff about his personal life and like not really knowing where he's going, and all of it is very vague to the sense where he could have had like a drunk dad and, you know, a mom that was dead, or whichever way it went. I think it went that way because it's Lost, bad dads. And then, you know, also been a cop.
Bad dads.
He hasn't directly lied to John, which I thought was interesting.
You know, at the end, we know that Eddie's been lying to be undercover. Like, you kind of wonder how much he knows about John. But I guess that's sort of one of those things that's left in, it's in the bear cave. You know, we're never really going to find out what Eddie was really investigating.
It is interesting that Eddie has a file, like, you know, presumably Eddie has a file unlocked, just like the others have files on, our Losties.
And it's judged him a good person, like the others judge good and bad.
Oh, this is my in. Or judge him to be a sucker.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about that. I mean, like, we can rightfully, I think, say something negative things about this flashback. But this idea that like Locke is amenable to coercion is important. And this desperate like thirst that Locke has for being important and being chosen. He's like, why'd you choose me? Which is sort of like a question Locke will continue to ask and has asked before. So, you know, that's just file that away.
And all the islands really had to do was fix his legs. And he's in, 100%.
And bring Ian Somerhalder back for a ghost appearance. That's it. That's all you need.
When he thinks he's out, he's getting reeled back in by the island.
Pulled it back in. It's time for the jungle of Kistery. Joanna, remind us who won last week.
So last week, as you may recall, is the Glass Ballerina. We've got some, sexy on the boat stuff happening. Also, a lady got shot, and some bear cage stuff happening. So we're going to start at the bottom here. Sun and Jay Lee, aka Sex Luthor. Nobody is happy about them. 16.5% of the vote.
We got a lot of for Sex Luthor.
Some real gin heads here, as evidenced by Jin coming in third place. Jin and Saeed just after Jin cocks the gun. So a little bro bonding over guns. Yay, love it. Then we've got Jack, the thruple of the week, Jack Ben, and the World Series win with 23.9% of the vote.
Jack Ben and the Red Sox.
But number one on the list, and how can you beat it, really? Fish Biscuit and Strawberries. It's Sawyer and Kate, 36.2% of the vote. So there you go.
Somehow those are better nicknames for them than anything Sawyer would ever come up with.
Than Freckles, Freckles and whatever.
Yeah.
All right. And then this week we've got a few entries from listeners and one from Dave. Dave really wanted to make sure that the polar bear made it into the list this week.
He was not going to stand for any polar bear erasure.
That's right. The polar bear, who we've now named and, you know, anthropomorphized.
Well, Gerald.
So Gerald and Echo. He kissed Echo real good with his claws and maybe his teeth a little. So
he wanted to be friends, but nature gave him these giant bear claws.
So Dave's entry is Echo and the polar bear. Our listener Phil nominates Hurley and Dirty Naked Dez. So, you know, no tie-dye required.
Especially if Desmond finds out about Libby. Oh.
Desmond?
Wait, did he find out about Libby? Yeah, he already knows. They could have a little moment about Libby.
Gave me my boat. Well, does he? I don't think he knows yet that.
Yeah, they should figure it out and then kiss.
I hope that Hurley is like, there was a girl, her name was Libby, she had long hair, and then doesn't have to be like, oh, and kind of like big blue eyes, and like she's kind of pale. Yeah, she's kind of like, there's no photo, you just have to describe Libby to each
she
other
used
anyway
to own a sailboat. Yeah. Wow, crazy.
Wow. Do you two have a invisible friend named Dave? Okay, so Tori would like to suggest Gooped Lock and a Magical Mystery Boon. I'm a big fan of that.
A little bit of makeup action.
Boone is back. Boone is on loan for the Vampire Diaries, and Ian Somerhalder has brought all of his vampire smolder to the role. So, Goop Lock, Magical Mystery Boon. And last but not least, Luke has put forward John Locke and what he is calling Island Pudding.
Commonly known as Goop.
As the Goop. I typed in Island Pudding to Lostpedia to see if it was like something that other people called the Goop. Mm-hmm. And fun fact, when you type Island Pudding into Lostpedia, what comes up is John's drug, the article on John's drug. But the phrase Island Pudding is never used in that article. It's just the word pudding is in there because the consistency of the drug is that of pudding. So anyway, John Locke and the Island Pudding, Goop Lock and Magical Mystery Boon, Dirty Naked Des and Hurley, or Polar Bear and Mr. Echo. These will be up on our Twitter account, and you can go vote and make sure that the Goop wins, because as you know, the Goop's
on there twice. No. It should win.
Love for Jer. Polar Bear. Where's Libby? This is our segment where, since we have lost Libby on the island, we imagine where she is in all the flashbacks, so we have the complete timeline of Libby, the quester who's always getting closer to the island. Yes, Joanna, would you like to read this week's?
I didn't write this. Did you write this?
I didn't write this one either.
Maybe I wrote it, but suddenly someone highlighted it. So it seems like Joanna's volunteered. Where's Libby this week, Joanna?
Libby is the product tester on the weed farm. Eddie, aka not Aaron Paul, accidentally refers to her as Lizzie. She is looking for a daddy. A Dave daddy.
That's right. Looking for her Dave daddy.
Some sort of weed daddy.
Some sort of weed Dave daddy.
She's looking for new Dave who's into weed.
Even though I just made an all Dave joke minutes ago, I forgot that Libby's husband was named Dave. And so Dave Gonzalez, I definitely thought you just typed that about yourself. Like, hey, she's looking for a daddy.
Hey,
Dave.
Now that Libby's on a weed farm, I'm interested.
I mean, that does make Libby more interesting. And she was single at the time.
That's right. She did find Dave, her Dave daddy. Yeah,
the sailboat thing was what didn't do it, but the weed farm might.
She's looking for a daddy. A Dave daddy.
A Dave daddy. You know, phrase that everybody uses all the time, the Dave daddy.
P.S. We're going to talk about, we're going to do our Locke antagonist check in in the storm. But I got to say, this is a great moment for Locke here with Libby when freaking Eddie's like, she's looking for a daddy, blah, blah, blah. And Locke's like, that's not funny. And you're like, yeah. That's what a real man says. Thank you, John Locke. So
yeah.
All right,
Daddy.
Podcast check.
Daddy John Locke can get it. Is my point. So
John Locke could be a weed daddy. Okay.
John Locke could definitely be a weed daddy. And I will go on record. I've said this before. I love John Locke's flashback wig. I'm a big fan of it. Always.
Yeah, they made some good choices with the hat in this one.
Yeah.
So that you didn't have to look at the top.
This week's official podcast check-in is actually from last week's podcast, but it's motivated from an email from our listener, Kyle, maybe you should break us down. We had a little debate in our Slack this past week over a conversation we had on last week's episode on if Jilly jumped and committed suicide, or if maybe he was pushed by somebody who Mr. Pike sent, or by Sun, etc. It turns out this did actually come up on the official Lost podcast. And not only did we get an email about it, but this week on the official Lost podcast, or the episode that is paired with further instructions, actually has no Carlton cues, Damon Lindelof question answer section. So instead, Neil and I are here to do this dramatic reading about Jai Li from Glass Ballerina for you. Neil will be playing Damon Lindelof. I'll be playing Carlton Cuse. Take it away, Neil.
Hey, Carlton, just quickly, because we might not have been as clear about this as we could have been. Did Jay jump or was he thrown? By Layla Red. Did Jay jump or was he thrown? Because jumpers usually jump face first. Okay. First off, before Carlton answers this, Layla, I want you to know that people care about you and they love you and that you're an important person.
We love you, Layla, and don't even think about jumping.
Face first.
Face first, especially.
If you're going to do it like Jay did it.
Yeah, jump with your ass first.
Yeah, cannonball style.
Both laugh. Much better for windshield impact. I think it would be a good idea for us just to clarify the audience that Jay did commit suicide. I mean, there's been a lot. That was one of those unintentional mysteries that we did not want to...
I don't even know how it's a mystery. I mean, you know, the guy gets beat up by Jin, who says, you're dead now. Like, you know, leave the country. We know he's in love with Sun, and he takes a header and lands on Jin's car. He's got the pearl necklace in his hands. I mean, what kind of guy grabs onto a pearl necklace before he gets thrown out of a
Wait. Before you throw me off a building, let me grab that pearl necklace.
I guess there are some... Someone assumed that Sun might have thrown him off the balcony, which is even more shocking to me.
Wow.
Because I wouldn't even know what her possible motive would be. And if he'd ripped the pearl necklace off her neck while she was throwing him off, certainly all the pearls would have been scattered.
Exactly. Well, that would be the reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad we cleared that up.
I just want to quickly read a thing that I read on Lossopedia that had never occurred to me that I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Despite her not being involved with Jay Lee's death, the dropping of the ballerina compared with the windshield that shattered as a result of his suicide may be a symbolic connection that both events occur as a result of Sun's unwillingness to take responsibility for her actions, her knocking over the ballerina and her love affair with Jay Li.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean,
I like that. I like
definitely different stakes, but definitely two things Sun broke.
Yes. The ballerina
and Jay Li.
Poor broken smooth boy. All right, Joanna, who are we talking to this week?
Oh my God, the dream! Jodi Avergan is here. Jodi has not seen Beyond this episode, so we had a good time talking about some of his theories. He also, as I mentioned, enjoys Jack. So that was great, but he did not enjoy the Red Sox moment, and we talk about why. So here is my chat with Jodi Avergan. All right. So we are thrilled to welcome to the podcast one of my favorite podcasters, Jodi Avergan, current host of This Day in Esoteric Political History. Jodi, thank you so much for coming on this podcast.
Thank you. I feel like this is some sort of initiation into deep fandom that I'm not sure I've earned, but yes, this is fun.
We've lit the fires in the sweat lodge. Yeah, the psychotropic goop is out and we're gonna dive in. I was really excited to see that you were tweeting about watching Lost. As we sort of mentioned before we started recording, you're our first guest who is unspoiled beyond this episode of Lost, which opens a new avenue, which means we get to talk about theories, which is so fun. So
and you get to just like, it's so intimidating knowing that the vast majority of the world knows where this is headed and I don't. And I like, you know, I like that, but it's also like, you're the first person I've talked to about this show. So, it's weird to know that you know everything and I know nothing. Although that's kind of how I go through life anyway.
Well, let's really quickly talk about, why you decided to start watching Lost. Is this your like quarantine watch? Right. So why you decided to dive into this particular show?
So no like deep reason other than I think I had heard sort of over the years people refer to the first few seasons of Lost as almost, you know, as almost perfect television, like in sort of mythical terms. And so when casting about for a quarantine watch, when having that sort of like, okay, finished X, Y, and Z, now it's time to figure out something new, somewhere in the back of my head, someone, you know, something popped up and just said, oh, you know, Lost. Yeah, it's supposed to be really good. That said, you know, let me tell you the things I knew about this show before I started watching, which is very little. But okay, so I knew one thing. The first thing I knew was that there were numbers involved. Uh-huh. And I didn't know what the numbers were. I didn't know what they meant, obviously. I still don't, but I just knew there were numbers. The second thing I knew was that there was this like general notion that the show goes off the rails a few seasons in and everyone was kind of disappointed or, you know, whatever. But I just had this sense that Lost was one of those shows that started great and then went somewhere, you know, perplexing. And then the only other thing I knew, the third thing I knew was that there was this character who ran around yelling Walt over and over. For some reason, I just knew that there was this guy who was just, I think I knew it was maybe his son, but like I just knew that there was one character who all he did was just go, Walt, Walt, Walt. And now I have found out, of course, that is Michael.
Excellent.
And that was it. That's the extent of my knowledge.
That's it. That's really impressive. And you know, you've been tweeting about it a little bit and just saying like very broadly, like no spoilers, please. Have people been very good to you on Twitter? No one's spoiling you on anything?
Yeah, I tweeted at the end of watching the first season with a couple impressions. And then again, after the end of the second season, everyone has been very good. Though the most common response has been people basically saying like, quit while you're ahead, bail now, which I'm not going to do. And I've heard from a couple people whose opinion I really respect, who have said, no, stick through it. It's worth the journey, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, what else am I going to do? I'm going to finish this show.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of the, you know, one of the reasons why we decided to do this podcast. We started it right as Game of Thrones was ending as a sort of, we used to be a Game of Thrones podcast. We started it right when Game of Thrones was ending as sort of a, okay, the Game of Thrones finale is widely considered disappointing. The Lost finale has a reputation of being disappointing. Let's re-examine that show this many years later and see sort of whether that reputation was really earned or if it has something more to do or at least as much to do with built up fan expectation and impossibility of meeting. You know, when you have an audience that huge, the impossibility of pleasing people with where you land. So,
well, and also when you kind of throw that many narrative balls in the air, you're not going to be able to juggle it. And that's very Game of Thrones as well. I happen to be one of the few people who thought the finale of Game of Thrones was just fine. And so maybe I'll feel the same about Lost.
I think you'll be fine. You know, and the thing about Lost, you know, it starts, you know, as you just went through these first couple seasons, it starts in season one as a very much like, Gilligan's Island survivor human drama sort of show and just becomes more and more genre friendly as it goes on. And I think the general appetite for genre television wasn't as strong then as it is now. And so I think when stuff really goes off the rails, like, you know, we get, you know, a dream sequence in this episode or whatever, I think audiences on an ABC drama primetime weren't maybe ready for where it was going, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So. Yeah, totally. Before we start talking, can I ask you one other thing?
I
now have the advantage of talking to someone who knows this show, but like the other thing that I felt, and I tweeted this and I think people responded to it, but you know, basically the first big thing that hit me about this show was how impressive of a character Locke is. And he's, you know, he's a big character in this episode too, but like I was just blown away by him as a character, but also as an actor. I think there's only, maybe it's that starting to change, but certainly for the first season, I felt like there were kind of only two good actors on the show. Locke and Hurley, actually. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of bad actors on the show, but like Locke just felt like, oh my God, this unreal character. And I actually started Googling around because I was like, I never hear him talked about as one of the greatest characters in the history of television. And I actually started like Googling like the Ringer's list of, you know, 20 best characters, and he's just like not showing up. And so it's, I don't know, it's perplexing to me. Maybe it's because something goes off the rails in a couple seasons and I shouldn't, but like, can you tell me, like, is Locke, am I off here? Is Locke considered one of the great television characters of all time, or is it just me?
I think the show continues to try to maintain its ensemble status. So I think, you know, as the show goes on, you know, equal weight is given to various characters. So, you know, I think there, in a different show, seeing what Terry O'Quinn can do here as Locke, I think there is a show where the show would just become the Locke show.
Yeah.
Or similarly, you know, Michael Emerson joined the cast in season two as Henry Gale, right. Then Ben Linus. He is also considered, you know,
yes.
One of the best performers ever on Lost. And he, Terry O'Quinn and Michael Emerson are the only two actors who ever won Emmys for Lost. And I think it's really deserved. But I believe they both won in supporting category. And I think that's just it. They're everyone's considered a supporting character, except for Jack on Lost. And that's, you know, in 2020 especially, I think we're all having trouble with Jack as a protagonist to get really excited about.
I've been listening to the last couple episodes, of your show and of this show. And I was surprised at the Jack hate. I get it. But I was a little, bemused by how much it seems like you guys like to rag on Jack, whereas, you know, to me the obvious sort of dipshit is Sawyer, and I know that's a very sort of basic thing to point out, but I don't like the guy. I think his catchphrases are stupid. I don't think he's a very good actor. He's the one I would rag on. But I only know what I know.
You'll be very popular with a percentage of our listenership who feel underrepresented, who do not like Sawyer. So yeah. You will be their hero this week. I wanted to bring up a couple things from last week that you sort of mentioned to me before we got on the phone here. You used to work for ESPN. You are a sports guy. Tell me why the Red Sox moment didn't work for you in last week's episode.
Oh, it's funny. The Red Sox moment didn't work for me because, I think you guys mentioned a sort of galaxy brain theory that had been floating around at the time about, maybe these people all died and this is some sort of alternate consciousness or whatever. But that had been in my head as maybe this is completely untethered from reality. Maybe, you know, this is just a post-death existence or some sort of dream sequence or something. And just that Red Sox moment, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was the first in this so far, first moment that just really clearly tethers this world to the real world. I guess we get that phone call at the end of season two and we know that, but something about the Red Sox moment and just that the people on the island are tracking what's going on in the real world and that it's pop culture-y. It just felt too small and I don't know. It just felt like it took a chip off the table for me, that I was sort of intrigued by, which is this is a completely different reality, universe, existence, you know, simulation that these people have entered into.
Yeah, it not only anchors the show in a reality, but anchors the show in a time period. A recurring bit we used to do in the season one episodes is we were doing the most 2004 thing about this episode of Lost. It was largely fashion based, you know, because there's a lot of early aughts fashion going on
on hair.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of fashion mullets actually in this episode, but and we kind of dropped away from that, but I do prefer Lost as a show out of time rather than something that feels of its time because of that isolation island aspect to it. You know what I mean? So you don't have to be reminded of what's going on in the real world at the time that the show was filmed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's one of those things, anytime you say, you know, I've made stuff, we've all sort of made stuff, we've all read stuff. And it's anytime you say a year, it just plants some sort of flag narratively. Right. And I just didn't like that.
All right. So I wanted to ask you, so now that this galaxy brain theory has been quashed by the appearance of this Red Sox footage, what is your current working theory, Jody Avergan, about what is going on Lost?
It's funny. I don't think I've been developing theories, in part because I think I do have this some sense somewhere in the back of my head that we're not going to get a tidy theory, so don't even start going there. I think I know that about the show. But you know, I would say I generally have I'm leaning a little more towards the mystical and the simulation and, you know, the people being chosen, good and evil. I think that it feels like a it feels like a purgatory-esque type thing to me more than an actual physical island that they landed on. And, you know, everything has a like sort of very clear mechanical, rational thing. I'm like leaning much more towards the like biblical religious consciousness kind of stuff, even though I did not like the peyote trip in this episode. I do generally like that kind of more mystical stuff.
There's some sort of judgment going on here.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, so if I had to, if you put me, which you did, but if you really put me on the spot and I had to say, it's probably something like, well, maybe they all died and they're in some sort of purgatory. And their fates are being decided. Or like, they didn't all die, but they like are in the middle of being, they're in that sort of transition space between living and dead. And this is all playing out to kind of figure out who they are and what their fates are.
All right. I'll just let you know you didn't just embarrass yourself or anything.
Okay.
That's a great theory based on the evidence you have. And then do you have any smoke monster theories, operating smoke monster theories?
No, I really don't. I mean, other than that, just when that happened and when it was done, like, I loved the smoke monster as a kind of, this could potentially be inside everyone's head, you know? And then the moment the smoke monster was a thing that we saw, but then other characters saw happening to other people, it just drew a circle around it in some sort of like physical way. And I was like, mostly I was just like, oh boy, they're going to have to explain this one. So my theory going into it was that like all the whispering and all the, even the smoke monsters, and all the sounds that people were being were not like actual things people were confronting. It was all in their head and it was all the island was doing it to them. And now that there's an actual smoke monster that we saw from the kind of like third person point of view, I don't know. I kind of just forgot, like moved on because there were so many other things going on and they haven't really revisited it. So we'll see.
It's true.
But wait. Yeah. Now that we're playing a psychological game here, the fact that your second question was specifically about the smoke monster as opposed to polar bears or all the other things that are going on makes me feel like, okay, maybe smoke monsters are the key thing that we're going to have to,
I didn't mean to tip my hand. I know that the smoke monster is like a thing that people love theorizing about. It's a, you know, like a polar bear on an island, you could explain that away. Some sort of sentient cloud of smoke.
Yes,
you're like, what's happening here? And then you've exhibited the great taste of being a fan of Locke and being a fan of Hurley, but, are there any other characters that have grown on you or surprised you over the course of the two seasons that you've watched? You're like, well, I never expected to be invested in X, Y, or Z.
I have a hard time believing how good looking Jin is. It's just like every time I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe they make people this good looking. But as characters I invested in, I really like those two. I mean, obviously I like the others are the most compelling characters. And Linus is just like, obviously, you know, we touched on this as an actor, he's running circles around everyone. And as a character, I think, you know, my sense is that there's a real affinity for Desmond. I feel like I just have this, somehow I picked that up. And I can see that, but I might, you know, I have a hunch that he's going to really deepen for me as a character. And I will probably end up really being invested in him.
Desmond was supposed to be a one-off early season two character. And then they brought him back because he was so popular. And I really love the moment in this episode in that dream sequence when you see him with like all those flight attendants and it felt like a very like, oh, don't worry. He's taking care of himself. Like everyone loves Desmond. It's fine. All the female fans are quite excited he's here. So that's fine. All right. So you get a Locke episode, which, I'm glad, happened for you since you like Locke so much. This is one of the weaker flashbacks, I would say, that happens for Locke in general or in the show. So specifically, I will say to you, in case you sort of start to feel like, you've hit the bad part of the show. When I told Damon Lindelof that we were doing this podcast from the start, he's like, oh, you sure you don't want to skip those first six episodes in season three? And I was like, no, we're going to do every episode. So you are in what even the creator of the show considers sort of like a creatively fallow time.
And I can tell. I mean, I haven't liked these last few episodes, and I can tell that it feels like they're treading water, which I gather from listening to the podcast is what they were kind of doing. They were just like, because they didn't know whether they were going to get renewed or something. But I don't know. It just feels like they're in this, nothing's really going to advance too much phase. And I can certainly feel that.
What are you most interested to learn about going forward? And like, what are you most curious to find out? Other than the sort of big picture, is this a purgatory sort of thing?
I kind of, you touched on this a little bit in a previous episode of the podcast, but I just want to know, like, why there are people who are living on this island in a suburbia. Like, I don't, you know, I think their motivations are interesting to me, but just the logistics of, like, what is this island? How do they build roads? How do they have houses? How do they, like, just sort of build this little community? Because the island is clearly, like, moving more towards its own little world, as opposed to a total, like, you know, spot on the map, totally raw, and mystical. And so I just have interest in some of the logistics of who these people are and how they built their little community and how they like found out that the Red Sox won the World Series.
And where do they get their groceries?
And where do they get their groceries?
Yeah. And how do they find so many copies of Carrie for their book club?
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? Yeah. So there's some of that. And then can we talk about the two new characters who appear? Like, it's happened a few times where like a camera's panning and you just see people in the background. And I know that there's more people who crashed on this plane than the ones we've met, but like these two characters just like showed up and like had a couple lines and were like referred to by name. This is on the beach in the final scene.
Yeah.
And I don't know their names, but you may, and they may become real characters, but I was just like, what the hell, guys? Like, where'd these people come from?
Yeah, so this is, I'm glad you noticed that. I wasn't going to bring it up in case, like, that just registered to you as sort of background people, but I think the background people, though they may have said things before, they've never said things before in quite this, active player kind of way. So this is, Nikki and Paolo, and, they're sort of, this introduction of Nikki and Paolo is sort of infamous because, exactly. The show is like, well, instead of finding a whole tail section of the plane, why don't we bring forward two people who have just been like, rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb in the background of the beach and make them, new characters this season. So.
Right. Wait, can I ask you one very silly question? Maybe this will make me seem like really, but like, in the flashback, I thought that was Aaron Paul for almost the entire episode.
A bunch of our listeners in our sort of Patreon Slack were like, or one of them was like, oh, I can't wait for everyone to see the Aaron Paul episode. And then everyone was like, no, that's right. Justin Chatwin. Justin Chatwin probably every night before he goes to bed curses Aaron Paul for taking his spot in Hollywood.
Sure. By the way, I spent a fair amount of time on the internet trying to figure out exactly what this substance is. because, you know, none of the drugs that you take in a sweat lodge come in paste form, or really any drug that I know of comes in paste form.
Yeah.
I will tell you that when you Google sweat lodge paste drug, the first hit is Lostopedia. And it's like someone describing the thing you think. Like, there's no other internet presence. There's no other reference to this drug in the real world. Most drugs are like, you know, powders and more harder substances. So I'm very curious what that is.
Yeah. And it's like we call it goop, and it's like goop. A topical sort of, yeah, it's, you know, the fact that he introduced it to Boone via like his head wound or whatever is just a very interesting thing. But yeah, you would expect him to be doing peyote or ayahuasca or something, some other sweat lodge drug we're more familiar with.
Of all my quibbles with the show, this is fairly low, I would say, but nevertheless, it is on my mind.
What is your biggest quibble with the show as it stands right now?
No, not, and quibble might not be the right word, but my biggest, you know, I was really saying of my like questions, but you know, my biggest quibble is definitely just the like, you're getting out over your skis, folks. Like, what are you doing? Like, you every time I think they're going to answer something, they instead just ask four more questions. And I know that's the thrill of the show. But at some point, you know, I want there to just be, and maybe there will be, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's an episode where they just kind of say like, we got to answer like four things this episode just to like satisfy some people. and I'd be curious to see if we get an episode like that, or if they're just going to keep, you know, I think of it as like a juggler, you know, with maybe with knives, you know, and instead of figuring out how they're going to juggle the seven that are in the air, they just say, well, let me throw one more up there. And, you know, maybe that'll make my life easier. And it seems like it's not going to be.
I like you saying, I like the ski thing, since I'm not a sports person. That's a new one for me, and I really like it as a description of a narrative that's sort of getting away from itself in certain ways. Yes. I like that. All right. So before we go, can you tell me a little bit more about the podcast that you're currently working on?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I did the 538 Politics podcast in 2016 and covered the election day by day there. And then I went and did these sports documentaries with 30 for 30, which I really liked. And then were sort of historical docs. That's all to say that I'm now kind of, I left ESPN recently, and I'm figuring out kind of what my next moves are. But I started this political history show. It's called This Day in Esoteric Political History. And each episode, right now we go out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and each episode takes one moment that happened that day in the past, and it's from all across U.S. political history, and just discusses it. I'm doing it with a political historian, Nicole Hemmer, who's fantastic, but it's kind of goes to this larger impulse that I have, and I think a lot of people have, to like look to the past to find some lessons. And those lessons aren't tidy. They're not totally perfectly analogous to now, but I just have found myself naturally saying, like, you know, a lot of what we're experiencing has happened before, or the past has a lot to tell us about what we're experiencing right now. In addition to sometimes telling us that like what we're experiencing now is unprecedented, and we should kind of be aware of that. But often I feel like we can learn from the past that what we're going through now, has happened before. There are lessons, or there's a path forward, or what we're going through now is a product of what's happened over the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years. So, this is really my way of like trying to speak to the moment, but not actually like cover it day to day, which is harrowing and, you know, means that I'm not sleeping or anything like that. And right. So this is kind of like my way to sort of process right now. And hopefully it is for listeners as well.
Now is the time on the podcast where we like to thank our Patreon subscribers at the Small Council $10 or above level. We have so many newcomers. We can only assume you're here to live watch Lost with us. So thank you for joining us. We would like to thank, or maybe live watch Breaking Bad with Neil. Who knows? But anyway, we'd like to thank Mark Halpert, Adam Swider, Max Stauffer, Grace Richardson, Guava Corvallis, Jolie Latini, Lizzie Hale, Raymond, Michael Lang, Caleb Masters, Liam Foucher, Kelly Gallagher, Sarah Adelhart, Jamie Smith. This is David G. Are you ready? David G.
I don't know how to do a three-part harmony. I'm sorry. I've never
Someone else start. Start it. Just say David
G. Neil, you start it.
David G. All right. It's closer. All right. So, Melissa Beerley, Jan, Carlo, Lord of the Soups, Warden of the Grills, Stephen Miller, William Eggert, and Susan Shirley, who sent me a really nice email to my podcast still watching this week. Thank you guys all so much.
And I'd like to add to that thanks, Weed Detective, who could be Weed Hunter this week, Molly Callahan, Gabriel Buxco, Pat Jukins, Angelica Cotto, Lauren Reed, Grace O'Keefe, Catherine Davis, Dickie Moe, the Ghost of Ghosts. Oh no, Ghost is still alive though. Jeffrey Saroy, Caroline, Patrick Gallagher, Cindy Schultz, Caleb O'Brien, Tony Perez, Jason Allen, D Donuts, Aaron Badillo, and Oli Ballman. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine human beings: Catherine Altmeyer, Bryce Poles, Anya Suzanne Sondness, Diana Fisher, Sam Williams, Delia Voch, Beth Weingarner, Mike Harris, Matthew Wilson, Joe Garvine, Grayson Owen, Rachel Simon, Guava Corvallis, Thomas Hatfield, Frank Perinello, Emily Ann, Lauren Adams, Heather Carpenter, Danielle, Aaron, Seagal Greenberg, and Caleb McKee. Thank you all very much.
All right, guys, it's that time. Listen to this audio message I got one day.
Hello, Dave. Terry O'Quinn here. John Locke.
Oh, as if we didn't know who Terry O'Quinn
safe
was.
And productive quarantine. I understand you're a co-host on the podcast about the Lost podcast, and I think that's very cool. I don't know what one it is, but I've heard a couple. And when I'm out walking by myself, safely away from everyone else, I listen to it sometimes when I need a little pat on the back, especially. But except that there are those who believe that John Locke was the villain, which I don't understand. As my theory is that John Locke was kind of a savior. Was a villain, I would have to say, it seems like, yeah, the black smoke.
That's where he says Dave is a villain.
That inhabited the sort of body or persona, but that was not John Locke, was it, Mary? No, that was not, she says. She's full of heroin. But that was not John Locke. John Locke was trying to himself, and then saved him, and then killed him. Just Ben. But, so my theory is he's a kind of a Christ-like character. He went to the island where miracles happen, and then he for our sins. Run with that for a while, this thinking Locke is a villain thing. That's nonsense. Keep your chin up, man. I want to hear that someday. That whole Christ-like theory. Okay, peace out. Take care.
Yeah,
Neil, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What do you think John Locke, for our sins? Did he bake for our sins? Did
he gooped.
He gooped for our sins.
He gooped for our sins.
John Locke.
He definitely goops for our sins.
That's the
just
next
like
t-shirt.
Jesus goops for our sins.
Yeah. Make like a cross. And inscribed on it.
Some of you may be asking, people, Dave, why did you beep things that were so obvious what they were? Well, because I know that we got some commies in here, and considering Terryokin was so nice to completely lay out the end game for John Locke, I thought I'd beep a few things so that they would obviously know where we're going because, you know, they got into the storm. They're allowed some spoilers. But maybe not completely overly
spoiled.
Well,
then they already know that
accident.
John gooped for our sins.
Exactly. And they know what all the beeps are. You know what all the beeps are. Welcome to the storm where now our Locke antagonist check-in has to include, because I'm a good sport, is Locke Jesus? Each week we'll be checking in, is Locke an antagonist or is he Jesus? I don't think there's only those two options.
This has now become Dave versus Terry O'Quinn, the segment.
This is exactly what I wanted, which is to take the argument out of...
to turn them against each other.
Yeah, to make it not Dave against Joanna, but Dave against Terry O'Quinn. Because he'll fight me forever, but will he fight Terry O'Quinn forever? Let's find out.
I mean, I'm excited to ride this through some seasons. Okay, because first of all, he makes a very good point. In the basic outline, you could maybe make the argument that Locke is a Jesus figure or a Christ figure who's, you know, dying to save... the people on the island. I would maybe counter argue I missed the part of the Bible where, you know, Jesus's body is inhabited by the smoke evil and then, you know, tries to get out of Bethlehem or whatever.
You missed all the best parts.
Isn't it he's being so snide right now, but he's being snide at Terry Quinn, who is like a beautiful human being and not being snide at me, and it's great.
Here's in Terry O'Quinn's defense, in his theories defense, there's a lot we don't know about what happened to Jesus. There's like 33 missing years. So there could have been like a smoke monster inhabited year somewhere in there. So the Bible, unlike Lost, is an incomplete story.
I think he didn't know that I'd be playing on the podcast at all. I imagine he suspected he knew I did a podcast, but he did not know it would be attached to further instructions, which I don't think he would be in favor of. If you're gonna make the Locke is actually a Jesus figure,
Don't tell Terry O'Quinn what he can't do.
fair enough. It's just not the best argument where an episode where he has to reckon with the fact that he killed Boone and is probably tempted into doing so by the smoke monster, right? Boone's smoke monster.
Yeah, but isn't then the smoke monster just the snake in the Jesus story?
Yeah. Well, is the snake in the Jesus story? Or are you thinking about him and Eve?
No, isn't it? There's this, the it speaks to him before he's crucified. Well, he's tempted in the
desert. Oh, you're talking about the Garden of Gethsemane temptation.
Oh, I would like to go back in time and not have said what I said, because I don't know anything about the Bible. And I was just like, I think you mean the Garden of Eden. And then Neil's like, no, here's some actual biblical knowledge.
This is not a Rodrigo Santoro redux. I am now aware that Rodrigo
Santoro. This is not the Raiders won the first Super Bowl.
There's one every episode. You just got to find it.
Jeez. Together they form a code that'll teach you the coefficients that need to be changed to save the Lost Island. No, this is a great gift from Joanna. Joanna, thank you for getting Terry O'Quinn to talk to me. And now it motivates me, which is, I think, is fantastic, because there's definitely a part where he's right. So it's going to challenge me to hold up my theory that I proposed at the beginning of this podcast, more of like a let's see as we track theory, but now I have to commit myself to it and die on this hill.
Your theory has been called into question by John Locke himself.
By the man himself. So by the end of season 6, I'm going to say that we will have had this like conversation over all of the evidence, and I will be able to accurately describe Locke as antagonist.
A PowerPoint presentation and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fantastic. That's going to be, you know, a literally come to Locke or come to Jesus moment for one of us. So, welcome to the new part of the storm. Is Locke an antagonist or is he Jesus?
Welcome
That's the update.
To the jungle.
Welcome to the Jesus jungle.
Do you think if John Locke is Jesus?
Yeah.
Does that mean Swoozy Kurtz is full of heroin? Sorry. Swoozy sure. Kurtz, the actress who played John Locke's mother. Anyway, sorry. What? I'm just excited by the fact that Terry Quinn's voice is on our podcast.
It worked out really well. Maybe he'll be coming back sometime, but we'll be definitely monitoring John Locke now that I've been called out by John Locke. It just makes me commit more, because I would like to be right, but
now you have to prove that he's not Jesus. So
yeah, the stakes have been risen. Or I mean, a best case scenario, I could just go full Citadel of Crazy Town, and by the end of this episode, there's a podcast on the Lost episode, The End, and there's a podcast called Why Jesus Was the Antagonist, and then Dave just goes right back to which religion was right. And we just immediately after that reboot is super sexy show. Joanna, we have an email this week for the storm.
Yeah, pal, we do. This email comes from Matthew Wilson, whose name you just heard read on our small council. Thank you. He is also like the king of writing in stormy emails. So thank you so much, Matthew. Matthew says, last week you asked about unanswered questions or dropped clues. Here are my nominations. The old clickety-clack itself. Rose says in the pilot that the sound of the monster is familiar to her. That caused lots of theories, which didn't really pay off when we get the origin of the monster. Like, why does the monster sound like a receipt printer? Number two, mm-hmm. That old favorite, the other side of the outrigger shootings from season 5. I know they made up an explanation for the series box set, but I still think it would be interesting to know the original plan, which must surely have involved some kind of real lock versus smoke monster lock mix up. As for dating errors and Lost, there's quite a few. Looking at Lostopedia, there's a stub on Lostopedia for bloopers and continuity errors. There's one coming up in Exposé. There's also one on the x-rays we saw in The Hunting Party, a 2005 date in a Jack flashback. Looking ahead to season 6, I love this one. At the police station, Sawyer uses Microsoft Word 2007, yet the splash sideways timeline is set in 2004.
Damn you, Microsoft Word.
Also, I just like
and
how...
they did...
Yeah, go ahead.
They used to release those Microsoft things at like like it was the year it came out was the date. There was a weird thing, but I still think that, yeah, that's not, it's a continuity issue. Like Windows 95, it came out in 95, but people used it for a lot longer.
I like the idea of a lock flock mix-up causing the outrigger shot. I wonder if we could figure out a way to sort of square that circle when we get there. Yes, we could be the podcast that finally figures it out.
The other side of the outrigger?
We're gonna prove Jesus was the bad guy, and we're going to figure out who's in the outrigger. Keep it coming.
All right, then.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this week's storm. Until next week, we will be...
Sorry for the short storm, guys. I apologize. Usually we're a little longer. I mean, like, I guess we should talk about this amenable to coercion thing and, like, how early, you know, this is the whole thing.
He's so amenable to coercion that eventually old Clickety Clack takes his body.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Like, Locke's like, am I special? And basically the island / Ben / whatever is like, specially gullible.
If well, you it's consider also by the being end of this... super gullible special, yes.
Then yes.
By the end of this season, he's gone from not being able to shoot Eddie to protect his new family to throwing a knife into Naomi's back to protect his
Naomi,
new family.
Naomi had it coming. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, I mean, either way, that's a different... He's not teary-eyed, standing, waiting to throw the knife. He just does it. No hesitation.
I mean, we're witnessing, you know, Locke go from... Because I guess, you know, when he gets to the island or when he's having this conversation with Eddie in the flashback in the past, he's not really a killer. But, you know, Boone's sort of A number one on the John Locke taking people out, and he eventually...
How gullible takes a was couple of people Jesus? Out,
you know?
That's true. yeah, I think this season of Locke is a lot of Locke tromping around trying to figure out what his purpose is. And I guess the sad thing is I don't remember exactly, since it's been a while since my full rewatch, if this version of Locke ever gets that piece. Because I don't think he does.
I think he finds it in the Flash sideways. You know what I mean?
Well, sure. This version of Locke is like his best days of sitting in the rain, chewing on some oranges, playing some backgammon. Those are all behind him. He's out of the 33 Jesus training period years that he was referring to.
He's definitely in
the trial period.
There's times when he's like leading the others that he feels really confident in what he's doing. There's the time when he's like, there are times that Richard tells him he's special and he believes it, which is all a trap that the smoke monster sort of set for him, but like a time travel trap or whatever. But you know, like, it's sad. Locke's story is sad, which is why I get kind of mad every time you call him an antagonist, because it's really a tragedy. It's not anything else. So, you know.
Well, good antagonists, they could have sad stories too, Joanna.
Okay.
Xanatos from Gargoyles is, you know, man, you like really Jesus. Feel for that guy. Just nothing goes his way. Or Jesus? very sad bad guy story. All right. Certainly we won't get any emails about all of that. That's super non-controversial. Neo, where are we headed next week on the island?
Well, next week we're heading to an episode focused on someone who himself is extremely non-controversial. The episode is titled Every Man for Himself. The focal character will be Sawyer, and there will be nicknames.
Ho, nicknames. Joy. Maybe some more fish biscuits. Where could people find more of your work online? Until then, let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Oh, you can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis. We are wrapping up our coverage of Mrs. America, the great FX on Hulu series on the Still Watching podcast. And this week on Little Gold Men, we watched Cabaret and talked about that over there.
And Neil Miller.
Well, you can always get me over at Film School Rejects or on Twitter @Rejects or on Twitter @OnePerfectShot, where As of this day we are recording it, I am happy to report that I found three fun shots from Todd Phillips' 2000 comedy Road Trip, one of which involves Lost alumni DJ Qualls, who played Hurley's best friend.
DJ Qualls.
Yep. So there you go.
That is a problematic film.
Oh, God. Is it?
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You could also listen to my other podcast. It's called Fighting in the War Room. We just had our 300th episode, and we're marching on into a brave new pandemic future. But while you're marching, make sure to look down where you're stepping, because you don't want to lose your footing and fall down. It's very important to me that you, our listeners, do not fall down. We'll see you next week.